Welcome to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where three Australians talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode by episode.
I'm Chris.
I'm Mabel.
And I'm Megan. And today we are talking about season three, episode three, Faith, Hope and Trick.
I kind of really like this one.
Yeah?
This felt like the actual first episode of season three. I feel like the last two were just like tying up loose ends of what season two left. This is like, okay, we're Buffy now. Come on.
Yeah. And I think you find that with like the opening scene, even it's almost like the first episode of season one. Like you're back on the front steps of Sunnydale High and like it's just like school again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into it. Faith, Hope and Trick, written by David Greenwalt, directed by James A. Contner. Just as Buffy tries to return to her normal life of going to school, hanging out with friends, saving the world, she's faced with the arrival of an ancient cloven-hoofed villain and his sucking sidekick, Mr. Trick. That's what it says. Another new Sunnydale arrival, Faith, helps Buffy in her battle against the unspeakable demons and ingratiates herself into every aspect of Buffy's life. Yeah, I think that fairly well sums it up.
Fucking sidekick. I didn't know we were calling vampire henchmen that now.
Sidekick. Mr. Trick does anything but suck. That guy is awesome. I love it.
Are we getting into this now?
No.
Big Mr. Trick fan over here. I'm number one in the... I'm president of the Mr. Trick fan club.
Excellent. I mean, as far as everyone else in this episode, Mr. Trick is up there in terms Mr. of Trick like pleasure to watch.
Of you all know? The new characters introduced this episode... He is by far the most enjoyable to watch.
They sort of left off insinuating that he would be sticking around. Mm. Is he sticking around?
I don't know, Chris.
All right,
that's a great question. Can't wait to find out.
It's great.
Sweet.
You know what you should do? Watch the next episodes and find out.
Okay.
I mean, you know, he's a modern vampire. He's all about big picture thinking. Yeah, yeah. Hopefully he figures out some big picture plans.
Who knows? So we open on a picnic in the park. That just feels delightful. How very un-Buffy like.
How good were free periods? Seriously. How good were they?
Willow's so cute with her like anti-rebellious nature, unwilling to step across the street.
I can do this.
That was me for the first time, the first free period, but pretty used to it pretty quick.
School was, my school was pretty chill anyway, but it was great. For my last 2 years of schooling, we were between two campuses, so we were kind of always off campus. You had like three classes for the day, and at recess and lunch, you would catch the train to the other school, so you kind of...
Oh.
And if you had a free, you had like a whole third of the day off. It was... If you had a double free, you only had like one class for the day. It was pretty sweet.
Anyway. So we go to the park. Cordy crams complex issues into a nutshell. God, I love her.
Good. They strategically uncouple as they approach Buffy. Like 3, 2, 1, uncouple. Because she's so sad.
And then Willow. Honestly, Willow is like...
Really pushing the dating?
I know. And she's like, do that thing with your mouth that boys like. No, not that thing. The other thing. The half smile thing. Definitely, like I'm 100% Willow in high school at this moment. Like I can remember one time someone was being a dick to me and I like stuck my middle finger up and I was like, all I need is my finger, and everybody just pissed themselves laughing because it just did not come across.
Oh.
Yeah, that was easy to do. I think a lot of people had those lines.
Everything's innuendo when you're 15, 16.
Literally. But yeah, I'm again throughout this episode in this one Buffy herself expresses a little more that she like wants to get back into dating and shopping and getting. But Willow's, I don't know why we're pushing for dating. Like why is actively dating such like a normal high school activity? Like date if you like someone. I didn't know it was like a recreational weekend activity to just date for the lols.
I don't know about you guys, but I don't recall ever feeling pushed or pushing my friends to date. Like maybe if there was someone that was flirting and like wanting to get in my friend's pants, I'd be like, come on, dude, make it happen. Maybe. I mean, it's not out of nowhere with it. Scott likes her.
This rings quite true to me. Like this very conversation here. Just because I went to an all boys school and like, you know, the idea is you go and date, but like the very few females we did know just seemed to have absolutely no interest at all. And so that seems to reflect here. I wasn't really sure. I wish someone could have sat me down and gone, Chris, just wait a couple of years, man. They'll become interested. They get interested.
Well, it was so subtle. Like apparently she just did her little half smile thing and Buffy and Xander called her a slut for it.
Yeah, here we are.
She punched him hard for that. Real glad. Real glad. Yeah. I'm going to have a lot to say about Xander throughout this episode. Not sorry. He's really having some vertigo this episode. He's just like reverting right back to really crappy.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's because like on one hand, like, you know, some stuff happens in this episode, but on another hand, like not that much happens in this episode. And I think once again, like there was nothing else for Xander to do. So they just like gave him his like default season one character lines again. And like that was his whole character for this episode.
Lazy writing. They just
went back to default Xander, which, you know, he'd grown from that and we liked it. Well,
lazy writing.
Yeah.
Anyway, we cut to creepy dude at the drive-thru. I love welcome, Mr. Trick.
This scene might be the best scene in Buffy yet.
Oh, I think.
It is so well done. Like, I think it's just awesome.
I love him. I love how he like full calls out the lack of diversity in the Buffy cast.
Finally.
Clearly the Caucasian persuasion here at the Nail.
He's not wrong.
He is not wrong. And then we find out that there's an even creepier dude in the car and that they are here to kill the Slayer. And ladies and gentlemen, before we even get to the credits, at this moment in time.
Wow.
Take this opportunity.
You got to be kidding me.
Did you want
that minor character? This week is...
Whoa, which one?
Dose. The father, Kakisos the father, an ancient vampire master of Greek origin, believe it or not. Shit name. Yeah. He was very traditionalist. He was all about torture and mutilation and vengeance and all of those good things that Mr. Trick is not about. I'd love to know how these two got together. Anyway, he was played by Jeremy Roberts, who is, once again, one of the most hardworking actors in Hollywood.
No kidding.
113 credits to his name. Ooh. He was in The Mask. He played Bobby the Bouncer in The Mask. He was in Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. He was Herbie Fully Loaded as a guy called Crazy Dave. He has been in like all of the like good TV shows that you know of: Veronica Mars, Weeds, Cold Case. He was Doogie Howser.
Oh,
yeah. I need to see this guy's face.
Hercules, The X-Files, Xena. Like all of them. If you can think of a 90s TV show, he was probably in it. And he was also in, I think it was a movie called No Strings Attached, but there was a movie remake in the 2000s called No Strings Attached. So I'm not even sure what that movie is because it was made in 1997. He is also famous for being one of the only five actors to initially play a character in a Star Trek film before reprising their role in a Star Trek television series.
Fascinating. What was the role?
He played Lieutenant Dimitri Valtaine in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country in 1991. And then he later reprised the role in Star Trek Voyager in an episode called Flashback in 1996. So one of the other Act 5 actors was James Cromwell of Babe fame.
Yeah. I'm on the Crom train.
Yeah. How good's James Cromwell? Yeah. Love it.
What's Babe fame? I thought you were yaying for Babe fame.
You know, Babe. The movie, Babe. The very
That'll do, Pig.
I thought there was something called Babe Fame.
I watched that till the VCR broke, Babe. I watched it again and again and again.
Oh,
I love
no,
that movie.
I love Babe. I
a bit
love
trippy
Babe.
Rewatching it, but yeah.
Yeah, we
I
just
went way better. I thought Babe Fame was some weird like reality TV show about babes. Like,
no. So anyway, Jeremy Roberts, another hardworking actor.
Yeah.
You, my man. And great job playing a really kind of weird, creepy character.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. During this scene, I was getting that tingly feeling.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, is this the big bad of this season?
Oh.
I was convinced as a team. I thought like their dynamic was really cool.
Yeah, they had big picture thinking from Mr. Trick. He was in a limousine. You couldn't see his face. He had cloven hands. Like, what more could you
I thought we were going to see his face for like 5 episodes. You know, I was kind of keen.
It's going to be like, the big reveal a few episodes in.
Yeah, and the reveal in this episode wasn't as spectacular as I was hoping.
No.
It was a little mundane, wasn't it?
Yeah. I just
well,
like,
he was a little mundane in the end, wasn't he?
He was fairly
So, very unimpressive.
Just before we leave this first scene with Kakistos and Mr. Trick, can I just point out? Now, look, maybe it was always his intention to eat the drive-thru guy, but he literally went through the drive-thru just for a soda. Who does that?
Who goes people do that?
Orders just a soda.
Isn't that the point of drive-thru? You can drive-thru for, like, anything and you don't have to get out of your car. If you're going to do it for anything, do it for a soda.
Just
like, no one's going to, like... I mean, how if you want a soda, how it, like any other way to get a soda requires you to park.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Good point.
I guess it is sort of a weird thing to do, but it's certainly not the weirdest thing that these two characters have done or will do.
You're right. I know. I just, it seemed
odd. Give him a break on this one.
I think you either have to go without the soda or you drive. Any other way to get a soda is more effort.
You're right. You're right. I guess so. I just, if I'm going to go to the effort of going to the drive-thru, I'm going to get a burger while I'm there. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I'm going to get a side of burger with
I think I've done it. Like, I think I've only done it as like the co-passenger where like the main person has gotten a meal and I've just been like, just get me a drink.
That would make sense to me. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you've literally directed that limo to go to the drive-thru when you're.
I mean, they're already sitting. They're already sitting in the back of a limo. Like, they can do whatever they want, you know? It's literally no effort either way.
You do you, Mr. Trick. You do you. I'm all for it. I love you, man. So we go to...
It's a very high spectacle kill, don't you think? Like, fast food places probably have security cameras. They drive away with the legs sticking out of the window the whole way.
It's pretty great.
They really not, don't care.
They are not shy about letting people know they're in town.
Right.
Yeah.
So we come back from the credits on a dream sequence at the Bronze with Angel. I've just figured out what's so creepy about all these dream sequences. Angel is in pastels and whites the whole time.
They do make him look different. I was thinking that here as well. Like, even though they're, unlike the, because the other two, they've been during the day, like on the beach and in like the Sunnydale High courtyard. Here they're in the Bronze, but weirdly he still looks like he's in daylight. Like, they just keep making him look a lot. I think they're trying to make him look like human Angel as opposed to like vampire Angel.
Like, ghost-like, just like kind of a ghosty vibe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway. It's weird.
Very effervescent.
Poor Buffy.
The spooky dream is better than the romantic dreams, though, I must say.
Definitely. Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Creepy's his little rotting face, too. I've seen that in HD a bit much, tell you what.
I liked it. It, like, added a little to the dream sequence for me. You know, it wasn't just, like, sad, you killed me. I was like, I'm already in hell. And I was like,
So she wakes up and heads to school, and we get Snyder, the Snide Man, as he's referred to in the picnic scene, listing conditions for her re-entry. And OMG, I love Joyce so much. Like, her interactions with Snyder have basically made me fall in love with her as a mother. She's so good. She's just got Buffy's back the whole time. And then right at the end when she's all like, I think what my daughter's trying to say is, na-na-na-na-na, it's good. It's just quality. It's quality Joyce. All the way.
I I like it especially because it's like she wasn't always like this. Like, she's now joined on Buffy's side. She used to be on the principal's side, yes, and be, you know, more like, oh, Buffy, like, you know, we've already moved once. Why are you making it difficult for us again? But now she's like backing Buffy, and it's a nice change.
So Buffy, reinstated as a school student, heads to the library with Willow to catch up with Giles. Willow unfortunately talks about Giles behind his back while he's right there to hear it. I love this so much. Bless Willow. Bless her little heart. Oh,
we've all. Does Giles really cluck when he's mad? I was trying to picture it in my mind as she was describing it, and I've never
heard it. I don't recall.
I don't even know what that would sound like.
No. So Giles has a bunch of weird powders and herbs that he's using to do a spell to bind a Cuthler. So he tells Buffy, or as Buffy thinks, to make a Cuthler pizza. Because, you know, that seems legitimate.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I love how in this episode, where I think that there have been, like, no notable lines, you've still dropped, like, at least three at this point.
So many more to go. You know, I just, like, I was like, I'm not going to write too many, but I'm still reading these. So Willow wants to spell.
Wait, just to go back a bit, did anyone else get some enjoyable notes out of Snyder's office at the end? He gets that call from his secretary.
Oh my God, of course.
Yeah.
Yes, sorry.
So we've got some more hints at the mayor. Yes. Well, it was one tiny hint in this whole episode.
It seemed like they're toit.
Yeah, every eight episodes we get like a little inkling, a little bit more.
Yeah. What?
Is this going anywhere?
Like halfway through season two. I don't know.
Because I feel like it's not.
You'd be like,
no, that's my prediction.
It's going to have this like, just weird reference to the mayor, like scattered all the way throughout all of the seven seasons.
And it just fizzles out without a blip.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I feel like this one mayor hint kind of just like summarizes everything about the mayor. It's just like Snyder's just like, oh, scary, don't know what to do with it. And then they just cut the scene. They're like, yeah, we don't know where to go with this.
Yeah. We don't have anything. You know what? It's the shadowy version. So you know how you were like, oh, we're not going to see Kakistos' face for like five episodes and we've just got the shadow version. Basically, we have shadowy mayor and it's just going to be shadowy mayor. We might see his face in the last episode of season seven. Yeah.
We better.
So anyway, back at the library, Willow wants in on the spell that Giles is doing, but he pushes back and asks Buffy for full details of her last moments as she destroyed a Cuthler that Buffy is suitably vague. So clearly still very painful for her. We head to the Bronze for real this time, not dream sequence. Potential season three love interest, aka Scott Hope, shows up.
I do not have hope in Scott Hope.
And of course, are you getting the theme of the episode now called Faith, Hope, and Trick?
Oh. Mm.
Oh.
Oh, Mr. Trick.
Scott Hope.
Oh. I did not. I put the faith part together.
Yeah. Yeah.
The rest I did not.
Yeah. So he wanders over because Willow told him that Buffy might be there. Bless him. He has no game. Just no game. And I love him for it. And she shuts him down real quick.
Aww. Yeah, he is so far one of the more believable high school students in this cast so far.
Yeah.
You know, like he was coming across very young.
Yeah. Except he's definitely got that general vibe that I feel like happened a lot in the 90s, but it probably still happens where like writers just make them way cooler than they possibly would be in high school. Like no high school kid is using the word mosey. I'm sorry. I love it. And I wish that I had been that person, but they're not. They're not using those words.
Sorry to correct you there, Megan. I was actually pretty cool in high school, so egg on your face.
I was mosey. It's just me then.
Yeah, so. Sorry to disappoint. Very cool over here.
He's had some seriously bad dancing on the dance floor. And vampire.
Yeah, I like how they bring back the identifying vampires by their outdated dress codes.
Yes.
You know?
Great stuff.
Who needs to hone when they're that obvious, you know?
Exactly. Yeah,
I must say, I think this was much better conveyed here than it was in like season one, episode one. Like I was so confused then, but now it's like, oh yeah, they do stand out. Like they just sort of shot it a lot better, made a lot more sense.
Frankly, though, in that scene, it's hard to tell whether Faith or the other guy is the vampire. Like her
out. Oh, yeah. It's Faith not- is really...
Actually, until you just said that, then I did think there were a couple of vampires dancing. Uh-huh.
And- yes. Yeah. Yes, yep. Thank you. So Buffy gets up to go and slay them. Can we just talk about her outfit for a second? Like, and I mean, not to compliment it, because it's real pretty. But, like, she should be Boy Scout level of ready. Like, always prepared for slaying. That dress is not a slay-worthy dress. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but, like, in terms of always prepared for slaying, like, she slays in any outfit. Like, to her, she always is ready to slay in anything, you know? Like, yeah, she's wearing, like, her skirt is always kind of, like almost penciled a little. Like, I don't think she has, like, she'd be able to kick very well in that skirt at all. I don't think she has a lot of leg movement.
Yeah. I know.
It goes in down to her knees. It's like very restrictive.
Very restrictive. Just a dreadful dress. Anyway. No, I mean, not
before
a
we go,
dress, but just dreadful for slang.
Before we go much further on the Faith thing and like the whole episode.
Yeah.
We have like a mini name that minor character, like a name that major character in this actress. Because I didn't want to look it up because I didn't want any spoilers or anything. But she's in everything. Like, yes. She's like a Joss Whedon go-to, right?
Yeah, she is.
She is, yeah.
She's in Bring It On. If you've ever seen.
Yeah, that's where I think yes. Yeah, I knew her the most aside from this. Bring It On.
Her name is Eliza Dushku.
Unfortunate.
So she was, she guest starred on Angel as well, but she was as Faith. But,
right.
She was the main on Dollhouse.
Yeah, she was the main on Dollhouse. She was in Bring It On. She was in Jane Silent Bob Strike Back.
She's great. I love her in everything. She's fantastic.
Yeah, she's good. Yeah. I don't like her. Faye. Not Eliza.
The character? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Faye.
Like in this
Why?
Episode.
Why? Why not?
Wait, did you like her in this episode, Chris? Like, I mean, you liked Faith.
Did you like Faith?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I mean,
I understand she was supposed to like... So it's sort of like half a, not like a full villain, but like a bit of an antagonist towards Buffy. But I enjoyed having her around, yeah.
All right, interesting.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. I can say it because I was, starting season three, I was very excited for you to like meet Faith because I like knew it was happening soon. That's why I was like getting to, I think it was last episode, because in the DVD credits, she's like big on the DVD menu screen. And I'm like,
that's the one you...
Yeah,
right.
I was like, Faith is coming.
Right. Interesting. Well, why don't you guys like her?
I don't know. She's just a real kind of dick in this episode, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think she gets more likable or better. And, like, I think that's why watching her first episode, she's extra annoying to watch. I don't know, because she's, like, a mega bitch.
Yeah. I'll have more to say on this.
Oh, interesting.
We're looking for the vampire, and turns out he's already under control because cut to Faith, Slayer number two. Here she is. She's arrived. She kills the vamp, and then she starts. See, this is it. She starts regaling the gang with the Slayer stories. She's all just like, ooh, I'm so freaking cool. You know what? She's that chick in high school who was like, I'm just one of the dudes, you know? I'm just fucking cool, you know? Like, I fucking hate her. I can't stand her.
Every time you talk about your high school times, it's just like, was your high school actually like TV American High School? You seem to have like had experience with all the same stereotypes.
We had the A crowd, you know, who were the bitches that didn't talk to anybody. You know, we were known as the musos. There was the nerd herd. There was the B crowd who were the wannabe A crowd. There was the sports jocks. Yes, actually, I think my high school was American TV high school.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I had none of that. None of that. That only existed in
super relatable. Like the Cordy shit. It was just so like, yes, that chick existed in my high school. Totally.
Weird.
Yeah.
Weird.
We didn't start dating the Xander of our crowd though.
Chris, did you like Faith's entrance? Like her fighting and like talking to Buffy while she was fighting and like, oh, you must be Buffy. I got this. Can I borrow that? Like, was that enjoyable for you?
Just kind of just like a cooler version of Buffy, you know? Just a cooler, flirtier, you know, better stories.
Face is livid.
I know.
I have no opinion on that statement.
I just found her a really interesting character. I think she challenged Buffy in a really cool way.
Okay.
And sort of hit Buffy's like biggest insecurities almost. So yeah, I just found her a really interesting character. And I'm kind of amazed that you guys hate her so much.
Having judgment because, you know, everybody's experience is their own. I think there are people who love Faith. I'm not one of them.
I think carrying off the last episode, I was again kind of like disappointed on everyone jumping on the Faith bandwagon and again kind of like leaving Buffy.
Yeah.
You know, like they just kind of started ignoring Buffy again. It was like the last episode all over again when they're all kind of like being mean to Buffy a little.
I guess it's a lot of people's worst nightmare, just like for the new girl in school to be cooler and everyone wants to be with them and all the boys want to be with them and like... do you think it's that? Is that the...
It's part of it. So
is that relatable thing?
Maybe you bring up a good point about last episode and this episode. So for me, the first time I was watching Buffy, and I think that's my feelings are all intertwined with how I very first felt when I was watching Buffy. Mm-hmm. Because Buffy had just gotten her life back at the end of the last episode. She finally had her friends back. She was finally getting back to her real life. I was like, yeah, we're going to get back into the Buffy rhythm. And then this other fucking bitch shows up. And all of a sudden it's like, we're about this chick now. And I'm like, hang on, can we just have a couple of episodes of like Buffy time first? Of like Buffy goodness first? Yeah, that's what annoyed me the first time.
I think the other thing that annoyed me throughout is just like, you know, the lack of perspective from Faith. You know, Faith is being all judgy and being like, oh, who's got to stick up Buffy's butt? And it's like, you know, even when she was like, oh, who's the, like, what's your toughest kill? And I'm like, she's like, what do you mean? She's saved the world multiple times now. Like, she's killed way more bad shit than you have at this point.
Yeah.
And like,
just quietly.
Sister, basically.
Her answer to your toughest kill, the three? The three? We're back onto the three?
No, but her answer really? Is actually Angel. She can't say that.
Yeah. Yeah. So
she says, the three?
Yeah. That was weird.
There's been way more tougher. They were like a couple seconds.
I know,
have we talked about them again?
But I think that was what was funny about it. It was because like literally no one knew or cared about the three. She was like, the three? Oh, you guys didn't see the three? No one noticed the three.
To be honest with you, I'm blanking even on what the three were.
No, they were like the Nickelback. They were gone so quickly. They had like a cool walk down the road. And then Buffy was just like, bing, bang, zoop, bye.
The three.
Which, you know, jumping ahead, bing, back, zoop, bye, is a little bit how Kakistos went, right?
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
But no, watch it. So if Faith in this interaction, I find it a weird thing. She's like, oh, you must be Buffy. I've heard about you, blah, 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 bing, bang, punch the guy. Can I borrow your steak? Yeah. And then she just, like, walks as if she's walking away from them. But then the next shot, they're all, like, sitting together. But it was, like, a weird, she just walks past them.
Yeah.
But then they're, like, sitting together. It's a weird thing to just, like, walk away from them. Maybe she's, like, natural leader. She's like, I'll lead. You guys can follow me back into the bronze.
Which is one of the reasons why I think that they're rubbing each other the wrong way, because they're both natural leaders. So that's why they don't like each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
weird question.
Yeah.
Are there any male slayers?
No.
I don't believe so.
No.
Fair enough.
Certainly not in history. I don't know. I can't remember comic book lore.
I don't think. Because when you think about, like, the history of the first Slayer.
Definitely.
And, like, the origin of the Slayer, I don't think.
It would be.
I mean, it'd feel kind of weird.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I recall some article that talked about potentially a male Slayer in the comic book series. But I
haven't gotten that far to find that.
Yeah, I can't quite recall. But on the whole, no. It's a female energy, female power.
Enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was always the point, was that it was this female.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So she's telling her stories, and frankly, I'm with Cordy on this one. Xander needs to find a new fucking theme.
Oh my God, legit.
Wanting to hear being naked all the fucking time. Seriously, mate, your girlfriend is sitting next to you. Find a new theme. Fuck. This guy. This guy.
This guy.
This fucking guy. So Faith says her watcher has gone off to a retreat and that's why she's come to meet Buffy. More on that later.
Why wouldn't Giles be invited to the retreat?
Look, so here's my working theory on that, actually, is that, I mean, I don't know why not beforehand, but I think that actually, like, in reality, and it's the reason why it was totally never going to be the case that her watcher was there, when you're a working watcher, when you've actually got an active slayer, they can't be pulling you away for some fucking retreat.
Right.
That's what
that
I
think. Makes sense.
Yeah. So Buffy takes Faith to meet Giles, who she finds rather attractive. And I do enjoy Buffy's reaction here. Raise your hand if ill. And you'll note Xander does raise his hand, but somebody doesn't raise her hand. Willow. Willow's quite happy.
Finds well, Giles
she didn't
attractive.
Raise her hand if ill.
Hasn't she mentioned this before?
No, she hasn't mentioned it before.
Oh, okay.
Why are you guys talking like this is going to be a bigger thing?
Oh,
Willow and Giles adopt Buffy. Haven't we talked about this?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they end up, they raise her as their love child. So Willow is also super cute this episode, where she's just so like, you know, and there's big trouble a brewing. It's really cute.
Good Willow app, actually.
I do like how from that and then kind of like the next scene as well, they like to just kind of like brag about how dangerous Sunnydale is. They're like, you won't find it. Like, we have all the bad things, you know. We got punched over there, kicked over there.
Yeah.
They have so much pride over their hellmouth.
I am annoyed by Willow's pushing of Buffy to do shit this episode. Like, she pushes Buffy to invite Faith to dinner. She pushes Buffy.
I thought that was a weird assumption, you know? Like, Buffy's like, oh, well, I've got dinner, then I can patrol. And then Willow's like, like, why is the assumption that she has to have dinner with her mum and Faith?
I don't know. I guess she's...
That not. Makes no sense to me. Like, why doesn't Willow invite Faith over for dinner?
Yeah, good point. She just goes off to hang out with her instead of, like, helping Buffy with her chem exam. Rude.
Oh, yeah. See, I think these were the vibes again. It's like they just started to kind of like drop Buffy again.
Yeah, like, I didn't like it.
It's like, sure, be welcoming to Faith, but remember your current friendships.
Mm-hmm.
I'm up for the new show, Faith the Vampire Slayer. Let's go. Let's play. I'm in.
Oh my God, Megan is glaring at Chris.
Oh, this is...
the hate.
Not a nice feeling.
This is always as bad as when like something misogynistic happens in the episode and you just like check it all out on Chris.
Do I do that? Sorry, Chris. I don't mean to take you.
It's usually more in person, but you end up kind of like looking at Chris the most when you have your
room. Oh, man.
I didn't do it.
I constantly have to tell people in my life that when I'm mad about something and I'm looking at them while I talk about it, I'm not angry at them and I'm not yelling at them. I'm just yelling about the thing in their direction.
Yeah, you just need a focal point.
I do. I do.
I'll be your focal point, Megan.
Appreciate it. So after they all leave, Giles keeps probing Buffy for more information on the coupler. Buffy keeps deflecting. And then Xander and Willow are giving Faith a tour of the school and we get some more season one Xander trying to like creep on Faith and then begging Cordy to dress up like a slayer for him. Oh, gross. Vomit, just gross. Yeah. I've literally got, God, Xander is at his worst, and then I've got Faith is flirting with Scott. Ugh, she's the worst. I just can't stand either one of them this episode.
I mean, she's not the worst for flirting with
Scott. No, she's not. It's not her fault. I just don't like Faith. That is totally, she's totally within her rights to flirt with Scott.
What, you don't? Gosh, crazy.
And, you know,
that not come true?
And, you know, again, it's, I mean, I kind of get Buffy's point of view here, but, you know, because Willow's are like, oh, maybe Faith and Scott, and like, oh, if you're done with him, not that you were using him or anything. And it is kind of like that. It's like, if Buffy's not going to do something about it, she can't get mad when someone else does. But I also get the feeling of, like, if you find out someone likes you, you're a little disappointed if it was fleeting, you know? Like, you kind of wanted it to, I don't know. Anyway, it's a little, she can't, like, claim someone that she hasn't. You know.
Agreed. But yeah, it just is, it's a bit on the nose. And it's just like, it's just a pattern of behavior now at this point with Faye.
Yeah.
So we jump to Creepy Vamp and Mr. Trick. And, oh God, he's great, isn't he? He's just got this, I'm a modern vampire and I'm, you know, gonna change the world with my modern vampirism. So then they're chatting away, knock on the door. Pizza guy is there to deliver some pizza. Who would be a delivery guy in Sunnydale?
I'm saying. and delivering to a place with no windows, like a
church. The abandoned warehouse looks cool.
I'm going to knock on this door. Everything will be fine. My old man.
With my friend one Peter. Pizza.
Yeah. We keep getting orders to this place and they don't come back. Let's send more.
Yeah, but this must happen all the time in Sunnydale, right? Like, this would be a genius way to get food delivered by a vampire, frankly, for a vampire.
Oh, yeah.
Miss Trix figured it out.
Anyway, dinner with Joyce, Buffy, and Faith. Faith is winning Joyce over two, and Buffy is just not loving it. Joyce remarks that it's probably best that Buffy was an only child because she clearly can't handle having a sister or a version of a sister. and then Joyce wonders if Faith could take over for Buffy. At which point Buffy has to explain that, you know, a new Slayer only comes when a Slayer dies. Oops, let that one slip. Freaks out.
It was only for like 2 minutes. Like, don't have a cow,
Mum. It's a pretty sweet moment with Joyce and Buffy. I mean, I feel like they overdid the metaphor for the whole Buffy Slayer coming out of the gate. I tried to march in the Slayer Pride Parade. It's just a touch too far on that metaphor, I felt.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Agreed. I do like how they kind of pointed out, like, I think this made it more obvious, like, one of the reasons why Joyce was so into Faith, I think, is because she was seeing her as, like, a way for Buffy to get out. She was like,
yeah,
which I think makes it a little more excusable that she was so pro-Faith.
Mm. Yep, I see that. So Buffy and Faith go patrolling. Super tense. This is a very tense scene, these two. I love it. We almost get a Buffy Slayer fight, but instead they have to kill some vampires. Like, even just, I'm sorry, like, I get that she's new and she doesn't know everything, but first of all, why would the gang have even talked to Faith about Angel? Totally not their place. And second of all, like, this has clearly been a love interest of hers and something clearly went wrong. And even though she doesn't have all the details, Faith just brings it up like it's nothing. She's the worst. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but
to be fair, I think Buffy was being kind of a dick in this scene, actually. Like, she was being kind of mean. Faith's done nothing wrong, really. She's just going on Buffy's
just
bad
like side. To remind me at this point that Chris... very early on, Mabel, if you remember, really didn't like Buffy all that much. You remember at the beginning when we first started? He wasn't that big of a fan of Buffy. He's back on I don't like Buffy train.
I mean, I don't think Faith was entirely blamed. Like, Faith was being a bit... She was criticising Buffy for, like, being too uptight or something. I think that's out of line for someone that's just met Buffy. I do think in terms of her not...
Been a Slayer for as long.
Yeah. For someone, in terms of her not taking the Buffy Angel romance thing very seriously, despite not having a lot of the details, I think, like, if you didn't witness Buffy and Angel, it's hard to have a reference point for that kind of dramatic love affair. Like, I don't think she could really assume, like, you know, just because she knows that it was a love interest of Buffy, there's no way she could ever understand to what extent that's a thing. She never heard the Angel music, you know? Like, she didn't.
She hasn't been there for the dreams.
Yeah, fair enough.
And you know what? Maybe the gang don't even know it that much about it either. You know, Buffy doesn't communicate a lot.
That's
I'm not
true.
A great communicator.
Well, she skipped town.
But this is what bothers me, right? So the whole time, like, Faith's going on at Buffy and Buffy's like, that's my life that you don't get to make assumptions. But then you, at the end of the episode, you get all this stuff where, like, Faith is like, you know, you don't know me, you don't know what I've been through. And it's like, could you be less self-involved and just, like, offer Buffy the same courtesy that you're offering yourself? Like, she doesn't know your story and you don't know hers.
Look, I mean, clearly she's doing that classic psych thing where she's fully projecting her own issues onto Buffy a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe that's a way of forgiving her. Anyway, a bunch of vampires come and interrupt them. Faith starts wailing on one vamp and is clearly working through some unresolved issues, so Buffy has to kill all of the vamps.
Ugh. Yeah. It's hard to, because on one hand, it's, like, very frustrating to watch, but then on the other hand, you're like, this is clearly some form of PTSD, so you can't really, like, be that mad at Faith about it.
Yeah, fair.
It's, like, frustrating to watch. I know you really wanted to be mad at her about it, Megan.
Damn it. Right.
I guess that's, I suppose so.
You're absolutely right. I'm criticizing her for a mental illness. That's really shit of me.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I hate when you're right, Mabel. I'm trying to be annoyed here. I'm trying to just like somebody. You pull it back to that.
No, but I think this is also an important thing to discuss. Like, you can dislike someone despite them having a mental illness or suffering from PTSD. Like, just, that's, you know, true. She's got trauma, but she's also unlikable. You know, both things can be true.
That is true. That is true, actually. Yeah.
She is not her mental illness, and you can dislike her for her personality.
I do dislike her for her personality, but I that doesn't mean I wouldn't try to help her through her PTSD.
Exactly. Bless you, Chris.
Mate, thank you. Got to go as far away from the microphone there.
That's a sneeze. So nice. So Buffy worries to Giles about Faith's behaviour, but he's not too concerned. He says he'll check in with her watching, but, you know, He's more concerned about this old mate kissing toast. Or is it taquito?
Oh my God. Oh my God. This line, when it happened, her saying kissing toast and Giles immediately being like, you mean kakistos?
Like, he'd go to immediately go to
kakistos. No way. No way in hell did he make that.
I know.
From not thinking about kakistos at all to Buffy saying kissing toast and then being like, did you just say kakistos?
Like, okay, maybe he's like master level of fame in terms of vampires. You know, like, he's that old that his feet are all cloven together. But even Giles doesn't recall enough about him at this point to know anything more than his name. So there's just no way. There's no way that he's making the connection between kissing toast and kakistos.
Also, since when does being an old vampire give you cloven hands?
That's
weird. Is this to do with his, like, mutilation thing? I reckon he must have self-mutilated and just, like, groaned with cloven hands.
Maybe.
It makes much more sense to me than old vampires becoming cloven.
Yeah, it's a weird plot.
What does cloven hands mean?
You saw his hands, right?
They were, like, pig hands.
Yeah, it's a cloven.
Yeah, they're hooves.
Well, it kind of, have you guys heard about Lobster Boy?
I feel like that rings a bell.
So he's like an old, like when they used to do the freak show and the circus and stuff. And like, so it was this boy who had like lobster hands. They look sort of like a lot like this guy's. And absolute piece of shit. Used to beat his multiple wives and children. Had a terrible death. Was shot by one of his wives, I think.
Oh my God.
I'm pretty sure. Don't quote me on that. But terrible story. Terrible story. Ooh. And he lived a really sad life. I think it was his feet as well, I think. I think it might have been his hands and feet both had the same sort of
cloven. So it's like split like in two. Boy. So like you can have a hoof, like a horse has a hoof, right? But then a pig has a cloven hoof because it's got like two parts to the hoof. There's a
okay.
I don't know that. I just looked it up while you were talking.
I was like, man, how do you know so much about cloven hooves?
I really looked it up while you were telling the Lobster Boy story.
You seemed such a genuine expert.
For the true crime nuts out there, though, look up Lobster Boy.
It's interesting. I'm going to look that up story. When we finish today. So Buffy reckons that kakistos and Faith are connected, and she's decided she's going to go and talk to Faith about it. Well, Giles talks to the Watcher. She heads off, strutting down the hallway. She's got her I'm going to work Buffy strut and her Buffy music. Boom! Interrupted by Scott Hope. I really love it. I love that moment. I love where she's all like, doom, doom, doodle-doodle-doodle-doodle, doom, doodle-doodle-doodle, and then Scott Hope's like, hi.
Buster Keaton Festival.
Oh, bless.
Who's Buster Keaton?
Hot
is
take.
Buster Keaton someone?
He is. So he's big time. He was deaf, is that right? And he like made a lot of silent films.
What?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure if he was deaf or not.
Maybe I'm making that part up. But yeah, he made a lot of silent films.
Incredible physical comedian. Sort of. He was the sort of Charlie Chaplin in his time. I think he might have been a bit before Chaplin. I'm not really sure the timing, but he was around the time of Charlie Chaplin and very famous silent actor, very famous for one particular stunt that's been recreated a million times of the front of a house falling down, and there's like the window
and it
falls down on top of him, but he's standing in the window and it like falls right on top of him.
That's a parody from him.
Yeah, but the first time it was done, it was very dangerous, and he was like, oh, we'll just figure it out, you know.
I feel like Scott Hope kind of looks like young Buster Keaton. Yep. I just looked him up.
Oh, he kind of does a little bit. Yeah.
Right. Like, if you were to make like a Buster Keaton biopic, cast Scott Hope. But like, make it in the 90s because Scott Hope's probably a lot older now.
Yeah. I really appreciate how much you know about Buster Keaton, Chris. That was very impressive.
Yeah, I guess.
It's only recently that I started finding out about Buster Keaton because, like, it was on some trivia show and they talked a little bit about him.
Yeah, he's the dude. Yeah, he's cool. Yeah, he's great. Yeah. Just quickly though, buying a girl a ring before the first date.
Just too much.
Oh, even though, like,
the guy at the shop said it means friendship, but it's like, I'm sorry, I'd have freaked out regardless of whether it was the ring my ex-boyfriend gave me. Like, that's too much too soon, buddy. You are like way overplaying your hand.
I know, especially for someone alarm bells. Like, and it's like while he's asking her out. It's like you're not even on the date yet. Like, you haven't even gotten past anything. It's weird.
It's super creepy.
Yep.
Yeah. He's just like a sad, pathetic case in this episode. I mean, not in terms of anything he does, but it's just like all his efforts are like, he like tries so hard and he's just, I appreciate him being like, this is my last attempt, otherwise it's classified as stalking. You know, it's like, yeah, he's been trying pretty hard. It's just pretty sad to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, really quickly, Buffy doesn't believe in leprechauns?
I mean,
that's going to be foreshadowing something bigger, right?
Sure.
It's going to be a leprechaun monster of the week.
Definitely, you're right.
This dropping stuff like that?
Yep. Leprechaun. That's
In the final episode with the mayor. It's the mayor and then a whole bunch of leprechauns.
The mayor's the leprechaun and then he's going to adopt Buffy? Oh, my God. I'm
guessing what happens on this show, Chris. It's really
mind-blowing. We said no spoilers because you can't tell everybody what's about to happen.
So Buffy freaks out about the clutter ring. I mean, because it was the same ring that Angel gave her, but frankly, she had every right to freak out anyway. So she freaks out, Scott runs away, Giles finds her and tells her that Faith's Watcher is in fact dead, not on retreat. So she goes and confronts Faith about her Watcher and Kakistos, and Faith does, you know, the typical Slayer thing and tries to run away. Because that's
the typical Slayer thing.
You're bitter.
It's expense because she ran away like two episodes ago.
There's a one-sided retelling of history here.
I mean, can we do that? Like, how long could Faith have possibly been Slayer at this point? Like, between Kendra dying and Faith being caught, like, she can't have been.
Tops.
As if all her stories are even true, you know? Like, how much slaying can she have done?
Yeah. I mean, she was probably being trained to be a Slayer before that. If you recall, most Slayers are trained by Watchers for years, Chris, before they're actually called to Slayer duty. It's just Buffy that was kind of already called before she had her Watcher. They missed her, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rough.
Yeah.
So I've written here, because at the time I was like, this is a total plot hole. And I've since looked it up and I'm wrong, but I'm curious about especially your feelings on this, Mabel. I was like, plot in the past or at least in the future, I feel like people in hotel rooms have owned the room while they're
I was thinking the same thing.
Apparently not.
Really?
Apparently not. So there's a great website that broke the whole thing down. And so there's like public buildings they can just enter, libraries, hospitals, school buildings. They can't come into a private residence unless they're invited, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the invited doesn't have to know that they're a vampire to let them in, aka Buffy's mum, when she invites, you know, who did she invite in? Darla,
Did they clarify the car thing? Is a car a private residence? Because Courtney had that issue.
They didn't. They haven't clarified the car thing. Okay. The inviter must be a resident, but not necessarily the owner. Once invitation occurs, a vampire is always welcome. If they try to enter a residence uninvited, there's a mystical invisible barrier. Mm-hmm. The necessity of an invitation does not hold for frat houses, dorm rooms, or hotel rooms. And this is evidenced by Angelus being able to enter Uncle Enyos' hotel room last season in Innocence. He could just walk through. And because, yeah, technically Enyos didn't invite him. He just said, I've been waiting for you, or I've been expecting you, or something.
Yeah.
He doesn't say come in. Kakistos and Angel obviously, Kakistos enters Faith's room. And then there's some stuff in the future in episodes of Angel that suggests that that's probably the case. Now, some of the stuff that I'm thinking of, it seems like it's actually apartments that they're in, not hotel rooms, but
yeah.
No, I feel like it's a bit grey.
Because this, I was trying to make some sense of it. Because I thought maybe, I mean, I doubt the writers would have put that much thought into it, but I thought maybe the previous scene where the hotel guy was asking for the money was like an indication, like, since she hadn't actually paid for that night's stay.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
But owning it.
I guess I can see now that would be, like, from a mystical point of view, like, you know, surely the mysterious way this stuff works wouldn't be that clearly defined by just...
Yeah, well, I was going to say you can't... Yeah, because then you're like, in terms of private residence, like, is it about who's on the lease or who owns the land title? And like, does Buffy's mum have to invite them? But no, Buffy can also invite people in because it's also her residence, despite not legally being an owner. So the mystical powers.
And I guess it is really mostly a temporary accommodation. Like, it's not a hotel. Anyway, sorry, yes. Chris. This one just really.
This is some nerdy shit.
I think
Buffyverse stuff. So.
Yeah, I think it's hard to apply like legal definitions and restrictions onto a mystical area.
You're quite right. So. Yeah. So we'll take it on faith. Haha. That hotel rooms and vampire. I literally didn't mean to do that. That you are in fact vampires are allowed into hotel rooms.
Which is really inconvenient.
Yeah.
You know, like how's this going to apply to Airbnbs or like
Great point.
Like, how do you ever go anywhere without worrying about a vampire busting down your door?
I mean, an Airbnb is a private residence.
Yeah, that's true. But then can you invite people in while you're there?
I don't know. Let's Twitter poll it.
Anyway,
they run because clearly the vampires can get into the room, whether they should be allowed or not.
How did they get out? Where was the other exit for that room?
It went out the window.
Oh, right.
Yeah, did they?
And I'm sure I watched that. And
yeah. I mean, I was typing at the time, but I'm fairly sure I remember them going out the window in another watching of it.
Okay.
They run and Faith finally tells her story about watching her watcher die. Buffy finally has her back. This is a nice little moment where it's kind of like, you know, Buffy's there for her despite the fact that she still probably doesn't really like her. She doesn't like lots about her, but she has her back, and I like that. But they realize they've been driven into a trap. Not a very good trap. It was weird. How did they manage to? I'm just curious about how they managed to drive them there because they were kind of just like running, right? Like, I don't know. Anyway, whatever. They end up at Kakistos's hideout. Kakistos shows up and they fight.
It's so anticlimactic. You know, like, I mean, sure, like, Faith is paralyzed from fear and trauma, but
she fights so badly in this.
He's not hard to take out at all. Like, he's not hard to take out at all.
Yeah.
I mean, they require the 2x4 instead of the regular old stake. Sure.
That big stake slid into him so easy.
I know, like butter. Yeah. That was
like butter.
That was ridiculous. And also, what is it with, like, two IC henchmen leaving their masters to their own fate? Like, if you recall in season one, the 2IC of the master just left him to his own fate. Mr. Trick leaves Kakistos to his own fate. Interesting.
They're not a loyal type, loyalty. Vampires.
Not a lot of loyalty.
Not as loyal as leprechauns.
Definitely
are, no.
Not as loyal as leprechauns. Not now how we've ended up with the leprechaun podcast.
Yeah. I feel like the big guy's hands were like played off to be an advantage and then were quite clearly not. Just looked
definitely
silly
not.
As yeah. He's trying to fumble around.
Like, I'm so surprised that like he was ever in a position to traumatize Faith in the first place. Like how did Faith ever like not kick his butt?
Yeah.
It's not hard.
No.
Faith's not a very good slayer.
No. Well, I mean, again, to be fair, she has only been at it for a couple of months. He was a bit bad to come up against if you won't. Like, I mean, Buffy probably had a lot of help.
Yeah, I guess Buffy's pretty good now. Mm. You know, she can fight off, like, four vampires at a time, no problem.
Yeah. And, you know, as we know from the beginning, like, Buffy's kind of always had a little bit of help, you know, not a great deal of help from the Scooby gang because they're still human, but, like, they're always there. They've got her back. So the fight's over. Buffy and Faith get some food because, you know, slaying makes you hungry. Giles has spoken with the Watchers' Council and it's official. He'll take over Watcher duties of Faith for now, so I guess she's sticking around.
Oh, my God.
That one was for you, Chris. And then Buffy finally comes clean about Akathla, that he was cured. Angel was cured before she killed him. She told him she loved him, she kissed him, and she killed him. Actually, a really beautiful moment. One of the fine Sarah Michelle Gellar acting moments. One of those, you know, I'm 16, I don't want to die. Mabel? No?
No, it's fine.
Sorry, it looked like you had time to say.
It just didn't strike me as much as it did you, Megan.
Shocking. Shocking that it hit me hard. I didn't cry, if that's any consolation.
We thought her sad moment when Scott Hope gave her the ring was more like, I don't know, I thought that was sadder.
Oh, all right. Yeah, fair enough. I don't know. I liked it. I liked, you know, the way she told the story. But anyway, Willow puts in another plea to help with the spell after Buffy leaves the room. And turns out there was no spell. Dad Giles at it again.
Yeah, I'm confused about that. So this whole thing was a ploy to get Buffy to unload the story.
Yes, because she's never talked about it. Like all of last episode, if you recall, they were all like, well, you haven't told us what you've been through. And she's all like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. So Giles is like, knows that she needs to unload at some point or she's going to end up like fucking Faith over there.
That's very clever, Giles.
Trying to find a way to get her to talk about it without like making her feel like she was just being bombarded with questions.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Good job, Giles.
Good job, Dad Giles. Buffy goes to see Scott again because she's decided she wants to go on a date with the guy who gave her a ring before they date.
She just wants to get back to normal things.
So they make a time to go and see Buster Keaton, but Buffy's busy tonight because tonight she's headed to Angel's mansion with her angel ring in hand, finally ready to let go of her past. Leaves the ring. Passes. Turns out the ring has some power or something because it lights up. It starts shaking. Oh, hey, naked, sweaty angel.
What the fuck? What? What?
That's a great question, Chris. What the fuck? What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. Can someone please explain what's going on here?
Naked, sweaty angel's back.
I can't. Stop
talking about him like that, Megan. That's disgusting.
I'm having my Xander moment.
It's not cute when he does it, and it's not cute when you do it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Angel's back.
I guess we'll find out, Chris.
Will we?
How did you feel? What were your thoughts at this moment?
Oh, complete confusion. Complete mystery and confusion. I have no idea what's going on. I'm not even sure he is back, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's just some fucking naked, sweaty
dude. And, you know, we've had a lot of dream sequences with Angel. So
maybe she just passed out while walking out and she's just dreaming again.
Maybe. It was a bit more of an eye roll than anything, really. It's like, what?
Oh, okay.
You're like, that damn David Boreanaz contract has got us again.
That's right.
So that's the end of the episode. I guess we'll find out more about that next time. Death count this episode, 9. So the Happy Burger employee right at the beginning. The lovingly named by Wikipedia or maybe the script Disco Dave, staked by Pizza delivery guy, 4 vampires dusted by Buffy, the motel manager eaten by Kakistos, and then Kakistos staked by Faith. Yeah, oh. Not bad.
Yeah.
So tell us about your favourite quote, Chris.
Me and Mabel were talking off mic that there's really not many good lines here.
I almost walked away with I'm still not sure that I have one. There's no memorable one.
I've looked through my notes and I have right. found one that wasn't stolen by Megan throughout the episode.
Well done.
And I think I'm only mentioning this one just because, you know, just poor Faith, you know, she was sort of bullied too. It's not, Buffy's not an innocent party in all this. So I'm going to go with, does anyone believe that is her actual hair color?
Oh
yes,
my God.
She has brown hair. Yeah, I believe that, Buffy.
I would right? if the intention originally was to have like some like bright redhead or something. And then when they cast the role, they had her and they just left the line in. That's really funny, actually. Yeah, I picked up on that.
You did well to find such a good line, Chris. That's good.
Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't exceptionally, like, I didn't really enjoy any of the lines. Like, they were all fine. Nothing stood out to me. There's nothing. This isn't even a line. I liked that part. No, I don't even like this.
You have a line. You can't have a part. That's
okay.
It's
a line. It's just not a very good line. It's the bit where like Oz is getting concerned that Faith is against werewolves.
Oh,
like, it's a long story. Yep. And then Oz just goes, "I got bit."
Oh my God! Apparently not that long. The long story. Yes.
And that's I just like Oz. I got bit. I think is a great classic Oz line.
It's a great moment. It's a great moment just because you've got Buffy being like, "Oh, it's a long story," and then he's just like, "I got bit." Apparently not that long. Yeah,
I always love Oz. He can basically do no wrong. But I'm not a big fan of the lines.
Yeah, my quote is also you're right. The lines aren't great in this episode. You're absolutely right. I mean, I've said most of the ones that I liked. The one I haven't said yet, which is the one I'll use this time, is actually more of a it's the same. It's kind of a moment, but these are the lines that go with the moment. So it's, you know, Willow actually says, you know, she's rambling on, you know, about the mouth thing, the thing you do with your mouth, and then she looks up at Oz and she's like, "You're supposed to stop me when I do that." And Oz is like, "I like when you do that." It's just cute. It's just very cute.
Willow and Oz. I hate that part.
You hate that bit.
Oh. Yeah, they're getting cringy, man. Oz and Willow are getting cringy. They need to fucking smarten up.
All right, let's try to find something that won the episode for us.
Listen, I had already written down I'd be a coward if I changed it now.
Don't let
Megan scare you. Unbelievable!
Faith wins the episode for me. I think she's a great addition to the show.
I think that's a perfect choice for Chris, and I'm not surprised. Honestly, as a first-time watcher, I don't know why you wouldn't pick Faith for this.
There's currently steam coming out of Megan's ears,
I'm surprised because, honestly, the first time I watched this, I hated Faith. So this isn't just built up over years. This is, like, my hatred of Faith started from the very first time I saw her on screen. Anyway,
yeah, but
I'm glad that you think, despite my reservations.
Yeah, I think that's because, Megan, you have always entirely identified with Buffy as yourself. And so when someone threatens Buffy, they're threatening you.
Yes.
You know, like, your foe.
You're right. Mabel.
Yeah, you know, again with this, I was watching it struggling and I was getting to, I was like, what's going to be the thing that wins it? Even though Faith kind of made this interesting, like, I'm not giving it to her. And then, and then Angel popped up at the end. And honestly, it just made it all worthwhile for me. I'm giving it to Angel being alive again.
Yeah.
I was watching the whole episode and like
oily Angel.
I wasn't that interested. And then Angel comes back and I'm like, oh yeah, he's back. Yay, I can't wait.
I must admit that was the only thing about this episode that was redeemable for me in terms of like just the whole Faith storyline. And I was just like, oh God, this is sucking so much. And then I was just like, oh, Angel's back. Yay.
That was me as well.
Yeah, but I'm going to give it to something else. Okay. I am going. Okay. You're right. This episode really just blew, actually. Like, there's just not much redeemable about it.
I love this episode. I feel like the whole show is starting to really find its feet. I feel like it was sort of rocky all through the first two seasons, and only now it's really starting to know exactly what it is.
Well, I'm going to give it to Mr. I found him fun. Yeah. He was a nice little lighthearted bit of, you know, bit of Mr. Trick.
Who was that, sorry?
I liked him. He called shit how he saw
it. Okay, see now, the reason I didn't give it to Mr. Trick is because I'm expecting something big later on. I'm expecting another episode to give it to him.
Yep.
So if that's not coming, then I'm quite disappointed.
Maybe. Let's see. Let's find out next week.
Guys.
Tell us, Chris, where we can find you.
Instagram and Twitter, CreeSlip, C-R-E-A Slip. Got some nice bread content there at the moment. Also, check out my other podcast, the Pool Boys Recommends. We do crazy stuff. I've been juggling and I've had to do like a ventriloquist routine and invented a board game and it's crazy. Check it
out. Good stuff. Awesome. Mabel, anything?
Nah, skip me.
All right. Honestly, I'm at that point too. Like, I just do not have a social media profile at the moment. I can't remember the last time I posted on Instagram. But, you know, if you want to anyway, at Miggles French, I'm on the things. But find us.
Buffy Straya.
Buffy Straya, because, you know, we post a lot of content on there. Buffy Straya, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Gmail at buffystraya@gmail.com. Yeah, drop us a line and stuff. Good. Thanks. Catch you next time.
Yay.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Australians watching Buffy. It's Buffy the Vampire Strayer.
Oh my gosh, actually, so we were watching a 90s movie last night and we were looking up some of the other movies that this particular character was in. And she was in something called Breast Men with David Schwimmer. Yeah, and the tagline for it was something absolutely atrocious. In fact, I'm going to find it because it was just so bad. And I was like, oh my God, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. Two young doctors with a dream of making it big, really big.
Oh, no. Yeah,
that's exactly the reaction I had. And then I found out that actually it's sort of a pseudo-documentary about the two guys who invented,
implants.
Yeah.
Implants.
The plastic, the whatever you call them. I can't remember their names.
Gosh.
The implant.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of
times. Anyway, I completely got
that would have been that would have been a better tagline for the movie.
That, yeah.
It was the worst of times.